Hello, and welcome to the Healthy Balanced Birth and Beyond podcast. I'm Olivia, your host, and on this podcast, we will talk about everything related to the journey to conceive, pregnancy, labor, birth, postpartum, parenthood, and beyond. This is a safe space where birth professionals, birthing people, expectant parents, and partners can come on and share their knowledge or personal experiences with our listeners. The goal of this podcast is to create connections, share stories, information, and resources to educate and empower people in their own personal journey. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Healthy Balanced Birth and Beyond podcast. Today, I have a very special guest with me here. Her name is Hannah. And Hannah and I recently connected through actually one of her friends who reached out to me on Instagram. Her friend Mackenzie reached out to me. As you all know, I spend a lot of time talking about holistic health and the importance of people knowing that they have choice when it comes to vaccines and when it comes to medical freedom, medical choice, and truly having informed consent. That is something that is incredibly important to me, especially when it comes to the livelihood of our children. So Mackenzie reached out to me and shared Hannah's story with me. And so I decided to reach out to Hannah because this story really, really hit me deep in my soul. And I feel that many others need to hear it. And so Hannah, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Would you mind telling everyone a bit about you?
Yes, thank you for having me. I am Hannah. I am from Indiana, and I have been a nurse for 11 years. I'm a mom of a 4.5-year-old boy who's incredible, smart. I'm super proud of him. A little bit about my nursing career. I graduated in 2010 and started out on a cardiac floor, did 2 years of that, and then I started traveling nursing and went to 5 states doing traveling assignments. And really loved that, but finally came back to Indiana to kind of settle down and started in IV therapy. And from there, I did a little pre-op, post-op, OR, and now I'm actually at an eye care surgery center. So I only work 2 days a week, and I am loving being a stay-at-home mom almost all of the time. A stay-at-home mom and an entrepreneur. I'm trying to help people get healthy outside of the hospital so that they don't end up in the hospital.
Absolutely. And so it sounds like you've had plenty of experience in all of the different healthcare facilities and that sort of thing. So you have seen it all.
I have, yes. Quite a bit.
So would you mind sharing your story and what your why is? That is what we're here to talk about today because it is something that is so incredibly, incredibly important.
Yes. So in 2017, I left the home of my now ex-husband, and in 2018, he divorced me. And the divorce was final in Indiana, but our judge asked us to go to back to Virginia for jurisdictional issues. And then the Virginia judge told us that actually the custody issues needed to be dealt with in Indiana. And so needless to say, it's just taken a very long time, between 3 and 4 years, to finally get a decision on custody. So back up, when Jackson was born, actually when he was in utero, I could feel that he was having seizures. It was not right. You know, it's not my only child, but.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How did you know what it felt like? How did you know that's what it was?
They weren't normal kicks. They were quick and like super fidgety for an extended period of time, like, you know, 15 seconds,
okay,
not like minutes at a time. But that happened for a little while in one setting. And I called my doctor and she said, okay, come in. It would be really hard for us to find it unless he was having a seizure right at that moment. So they did an ultrasound and he looked fine, healthy, whatever. So I went back home and it happened again. And the second time I didn't call the doctor because she had said the only way we could really see what's going on is if it's happening on the ultrasound.
Right.
So that happened twice before I had Jack. And then when Jack was born, they gave him to me for about 4 seconds and took him away immediately because he was having seizures.
Okay.
So he was in the NICU for 12 days, had an EEG. I'm sorry, let me start here. They gave him loads of phenobarbital and Keppra to keep him from having seizures. And then they did all these testings on him. So they flew him up to Riley Children's Hospital the next morning because he had been having seizures through the night. And when they got there, At this point, I guess the medication had kicked in and he really was just a floppy baby. That's in their notes. He was a floppy baby.
Wow.
And so the neurologist there said, well, how are we going to do these tests and get an accurate reading if this baby's not even moving? The meds have kicked in. So they stopped the meds, but the half-life on those meds were multiple days. And so basically we would have to be there for a very, very long time to, get his seizures going back up again and put an EEG on him to get an accurate reading. So long story short, we left after 12 days and his seizures had stopped and the medicine wore off and we went home. But more or less at this point, we had decided that because of the inflammation that vaccines can cause in the brain, and I don't mean can cause, I mean do cause in the brain, we decided that we were not going to vaccinate between me and my husband. So also in the meantime, when he opened his eyes finally after a couple of days after this medicine had worn off, he couldn't open his eyes all the way. And it's a condition called ptosis and it's bilateral, so it affects both eyes. And it is not likely a muscle issue. It is likely a lesion or lesions in his brain on the nerve of his brain, possibly caused by the seizures or the inflammation that also causes seizures. And right. So it's really unknown and there would have to be a ton of testing to even begin to find out. But the problem is that now that my husband and I are divorced, he and I don't agree on anything. And this custody battle has not really allowed for us to make any quick or determine, any really good decisions about his health.
Right.
That's been super unfortunate, but I will say in the meantime that he's an extremely healthy child. And so really there have been hardly any concerns between his eyes and his seizures. He's not had another seizure. And so there's, thank the Lord, there's really not been an emergent issue going on. But the problem is that my ex could use us not vaccinating, or I should say me not vaccinating our child against me in court, and he did. So after 4 days of trial, our judge finally made a decision this past Monday and said that Jack would get all vaccines that are mandated by public health and that he would have to have 40 vaccines to catch up before school starts next year. So 40 vaccines in 1 year. And I will also say that Jack had a medical exemption from a doctor here in town, as well as a religious exemption from me after hearing that there are aborted fetal tissue as ingredients in vaccines. And he had an expert testify, an ophthalmologist, medical doctor, testify that the inflammation caused by vaccines in the brain will cause further issues to his eyes and will increase his risk for more seizures later on in life.
So you had all three of those things within one of your hearings, and the judge still decided to move forward with his decision that you just explained.
That's correct. He said that my religious exemption was rushed. He said that my medical exemption was written too close to the hearing, which keep in mind as a 3.5-year-old, right? A 3.5-year-old is not going to school, and so there's no reason to have a medical exemption. I didn't have to have that for kinder music. I didn't have to have that, for any of his play dates. And so, of course, this is the right, this would be the perfect timing to have it because he's getting ready to go into school. And needless to say, because I'm in Indiana, a religious exemption is completely fine. And so I didn't even have to have a medical exemption. But thankfully, I got one because clearly, it wasn't even enough for this judge. So,
well, it's also interesting too, because I don't really, this is another thing that I don't think the judge necessarily may have considered, is just that if this was something that you and your ex had decided upon together previously, and that was a decision that you made, and now you are no longer together, now it seems that his decision is changing. So that needs to be taken into consideration as well.
Yeah, absolutely. One very specific thing that I made clear in court was if my ex was concerned about vaccines all this time, we lived together for 1 year with my son. And so why during that year did he not get one of the 29 vaccines? He didn't talk about it. He didn't complain about it. He didn't ask the doctors about it. He came to some of the appointments with me.
Right.
So it really does not match up, but literally the judge ignored all of that information and completely cherry picked when he made his order, and he only cherry picked the stuff for vaccines.
Right.
And I think this is one thing that many, many people have faced, and many people don't know what to do in this sort of situation. And this is part of my why, is that I don't think that any other person should have a say in what happens to your child when it comes to medical decisions. I don't think that anyone, like a legislator, a judge, people who don't know about your child, who don't know about your child's health history, who do not understand the gravity of certain issues when it comes to health, I don't think that they should have a say in that. And I also think that it's important to remember that if you are not truly, truly informed on the vaccine schedule, if you have not read a vaccine insert, if you have not spoken with a family member or a mother who has had a vaccine injured child, or who has lost a child or a family member to vaccines, I don't think that people who don't know any of those things should be able to make a decision regarding a child. And this is the livelihood of your son. And like you said, he already has had these issues that he dealt with when he was young, when he was born. And then he was in the NICU. And then you two made a decision together to not move forward with it. And he is healthy and thriving, like you mentioned. So yeah. All of those things need to be taken into consideration. And I really, really hope that everyone who's listening to this episode understands the gravity of the situation and understands that trying to give a child 40 vaccines in 1 year to get them up to date is not only an incredibly dangerous decision, an incredibly rushed decision, but it's also, it's reckless. And so I really want people to understand the gravity of the situation and why we are here talking about this, because this is a call to action for every mother who's ever had to fight for their child. And I am so sorry that you are going through this. And we are going to do everything that we possibly can to help. And that's why we're here. And that's why we're talking about it. But I definitely would love to hear a bit more about what you saw in your career as a nurse and what you saw in traditional and conventional medicine, and what made you decide to go this route outside of seeing the medical issues that your son had when he was first born.
Well, I'll say that my experience now has only confirmed what I learned while I was in the hospital and most of my nursing career. In 2006, I was in nursing school and my dad had his fifth case of cancer, actually his fourth case of cancer, but it was removed surgically and then it came back very quickly. So that was a fifth diagnosis. His numbers were increasing. They were doubling every month. Every time he got blood work every month, they were doubling. And the doctor said, when it gets to this point, we're going to have to radiate. And that's the end of it. That's all we can do. And in 50% of the people that get this radiation, get this treatment, it comes back in 5 years. And that's him. Like, he gets, you know, cancer every couple of years. And so it only made sense that he would be a bad candidate for radiation if it is likely to come back. So my mom kind of put the brakes on all of the radiation stuff and said, let's try a different route. And so they had finally gotten to the point of, okay, we're going to start your PET scan. We're going to schedule your PET scan and start radiation. And she said, let's put the brakes on that and let's find a different route. And so they chose an alternative after lots of research, chose an alternative route, and it was an alkalizing vegan diet with ionized water, which creates molecular hydrogen, and Juice Plus, which is whole food supplements. And long story short, nutrition, the very, very best nutrition that will feed your cells. He started this. 2 weeks later, he got his blood work done and his numbers plateaued, which was insane after months and months and months of it doubling every month. And then the next time he got his blood work done, it decreased. It began decreasing. And every time, so he did this for a very long time, this very strict vegan ionized water, juice supplements, Juice Plus supplements, and also green juice, 4 quarts of green juice a day, which is all organic, you know, no pesticides. He didn't play with any of that junk and then took all the sugar out of his diet. And so as I watch this happening and see these numbers decreasing so rapidly, based on his nutrition, I started asking questions myself, because I would go into these rooms of my oncology patients, and I wasn't an oncology nurse, but you know, I would have oncology patients in my cardiac unit. And I would hear these doctors say, yeah, just eat whatever you want. If it's a popsicle, if it's ice cream, you know, birthday cake. It was just like whatever feels good. And it was really frustrating to me to hear that, because I know that sugar feeds cancer, and I'm watching it happen at home with my dad.
Right.
And the fact that these doctors are not giving factual information about nutrition affecting their cancer was very frustrating to me. And it was also very confusing. It felt like a big letdown, because I really respected these people, and I respect the profession, and I'm so proud of what I was so proud of what I was doing. And so I just began, that's where the questions began. And then to add on to that, my dad was a chaplain at the hospital I work at, and his doctor gave him a exemption from flu vaccines. And that was a surprise to me, because I didn't know what vaccines would have to do with cancer.
Right.
And so I began questioning that as well. But as I look into it, 13.1 on every vaccine insert says that these vaccines are not tested for carcinogenic potential or impairment of fertility.
Yeah. And I think that that's one thing that when I first started learning about vaccines, I had started looking into them before my daughter was born. And I thought I had like a plan in mind, and I was doing like a vaccine friendly plan. And it was just a very different schedule than what the current CDC recommended schedule is. And then I remember just going to these appointments and just being like appalled with the discussion of vaccines, or the lack of discussion, I should say. And the fact that they don't give you, they're not transparent about it. They don't give you true informed consent. They just say your child needs this, or your child can get really sick and die. And it's disgusting, really. And people don't realize how much money go into vaccines and the lack of safety studies. You will not find one true double-blind long-term placebo study on any of the vaccines currently on the schedule. They do not exist.
Yeah.
And many people don't realize that. And I would love for every single person to actually be given an insert before mm-hmm. they are told that their child needs to have it, before making that decision, instead of just a vaccine information sheet that does not contain the information that they actually need to make a true informed decision.
Well, that was one of the biggest eye openers for me when I started looking and really looking into vaccines. Number one, nurses get about a day of vaccines. We have to know what is supposed to be given at what month.
Right.
You know, we don't know about VAERS, the vaccine adverse events reporting system. Mm-hmm. We do not know, if we don't know about that, we definitely don't know how to enter it in.
Right.
Navigate through it. We don't know how to, we don't know the ingredients. We're not taught about the ingredients in them, or what those ingredients do, or that they haven't been safety studied. Mm-hmm. We aren't taught to look for allergic reactions other than, oh, they'll have a sore arm, they might have a little redness. I mean, it is all misinformation.
Right.
Because it is not all of the information. It is not the risks. It's not the truth. And that really opened my eyes, because after I found out what a real insert looked like, what I had been printing off and handing to these people was a one page, mm-hmm. Couple of paragraphs of why the patient should get it. And again, a couple of side effects, which included those very generic side effects, which you can get from any pharmaceutical.
Right.
But that was a real eye opener to me, because what I realized is that I was essentially misinforming my own patients, because I was getting flu shots and pneumonia vaccines. And when the patients would say, oh, well, I got my flu vaccine and then I came in 2 weeks later with pneumonia, I'm like, oh, that's just a coincidence. And you know, that happened multiple times to me. And every time I went to the doctor to say, hey, this means something, they taught us critical thinking for a reason in nursing school. And when I hear something like that, I think that means something that needs to be noted. That needs to be, you know, someone needs to explain that to me or to this patient. Well, right. Every time I would ask a doctor or a pharmacist, they would say, that's a coincidence. Just let them know that's a coincidence, that's not related. And I was parroting that. And what I realize is how many of us are parroting what the doctor said, how many doctors are parroting what the pharmacist said, and how many of, how many of staff in general are parroting what the CDC said or the World Health Organization. Mm-hmm. We are not actually going home and really looking in to what we're talking about. We're just repeating. In part, I want to say in defense, I would come home to other things that I needed to do. You know, I come off a 12-hour shift. I don't want to go researching what I thought I learned in school.
I know.
So I can imagine doctors are going home to their families after their 12-hour shifts or what have you, and they aren't going to go research. They're just trusting that the CDC is being honest, and that the pharmacist is, you know, has done their research, and that they're being honest. And so I just want to say I don't fault the doctor, you know, the staff. I really don't. I believe that they are doing the best they know how to.
No, and I totally agree with that. And I think that's something that brings a lot of value into this conversation, is that our healthcare system is so broken. And I kind of wanted to rewind back to something that you had said before about the nutrition within hospital for cancer patients. I grew up with one of my best friends growing up. She has cystic fibrosis. And so we've been friends since we were five, and I grew up going to her appointments with her. And when she was staying, had to stay in the hospital, I was always with her, and I would come visit and I would bring food. And I remember just looking at what they have to offer their patients, to offer children's, like at Children's Hospital in Boston. And I remember I brought a menu home, and this was like when I really started getting into holistic health and paying attention to nutrition. And it's just astounding, the lack of like proper nutrition on there. There's like, they would offer you Cheerios and pancakes and Pop-Tarts and all these like high sodium soups and all these things. And it's just, none of those things are going to help your patients who are sick or recovering or in the middle of chemo treatments or whatever treatments they're going. None of those things are nourishing their body. And I remember feeling so frustrated by that and not understanding that. But like you said, I don't, there are many people who I do not fault, because they don't know, because they go to medical school and this is what they're taught and that's just what it is. And then, for example, say you have a mom who comes into a doctor's office and the mom is like, well, based on my research, this is on vaccines, this is what I've learned. Have you seen this? And there, it's a learning opportunity. And so there are doctors who can take what their patients bring into them and look into it and actually pay attention to it. And then there are doctors who will completely dismiss it and brush it off and be like, there's no way. So it's not, none of what we're talking about is an easy conversation to have. None of it is easy to accept. None of it is easy to really like wrap your head around. But what you made me think about too was when you mentioned seeing things happen one after another, it made me think of that show House. Did you ever watch that show?
I watched like two episodes of it.
Okay. I loved that House just because, I mean, I love that show because the character on it had an accent, and I love listening to people talk with accents. But in that show, they have a patient who has all these crazy symptoms, and what they're doing is they go through and they try and figure out what's causing it. And that each episode is dedicated to figuring out what is causing the symptom within a person. And so if that was how our medical system was run, instead of just like, oh, this is happening, let's try this medication to see if it gets rid of it, when it's really just a band-aid because you're not looking to find what the root cause of the issue is,
right?
How different our healthcare system would be, how much healthier people would be. You know what I mean?
Totally, totally. It's extremely frustrating to keep handing out pills when I know there is so much more to be had. And, you know, a lot of these patients are like, no, I don't want to talk about nutrition, just give me my pills. And
right.
I can understand that. But if they don't even know that there's an option, if that's, you know, it's not what's being broadcast on nightly news, is how to, we're in the perfect situation right now. Vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, all these things that can help really give your body what it needs to fight off disease. Instead, it's just like, okay, well, you know, everybody gets sick, so just come to the hospital, we'll give you a medication for it.
Right.
And it is quite frustrating. As a nurse, I want to help people, and what I feel like is I'm maintaining their sickness.
And I mean, I'm not a nurse. I did not go to nursing school, but I have a lot of friends and family members, and I also have family members who are super medicalized, who work for pharmaceutical industry. So I am like the black sheep in the family. Like, at first people thought that me talking about nutrition was like super woo-woo, and now they realize that there are alternatives to look at instead of just trying to find the fix at the bottom of a pill bottle. And so it's frustrating, and I can't imagine being a nurse and being around it for so long and feeling the way that you do now. And I have a very close friend of mine who, since speaking out, she lost her job. And there are many medical professionals who have lost their job or lost their credibility because they've been speaking out about issues within our healthcare system regarding what true health is and regarding vaccines. It's just, these things should not be controversial topics. People should not be losing their jobs or losing their credibility because they want to discuss what health is really about. And I think this year woke me up even more so. And I just think that we, and I when I say we, I have people who are talking about these issues about medical freedom and true informed consent and vaccines are women. They are mothers. And I would love for more men to actually pay attention to and listen to what we are saying, because we are the people who not only carry these babies, grow these babies, and give birth to these babies, but we spend every single day with them. We spend every waking hour with them. We are making sure that they are fed. We're making sure that they have everything that they possibly need, loving, caring, everything. And so I would love to see more people within the medical community speak out if they've been feeling like they can't speak out or they've been afraid to. I would love to see more people doing that, and also more men standing up and more men fighting for this.
We definitely need men on our team. And when I see it, it is like, it's life-giving. Like, okay, we are not alone, but you're right. It is women who are day in and day out. For the most part, it's women who are day in and day out. And I believe God gave us an intuition that said, pay close attention to your child so that when something changes, you can take note.
Yes.
And I have a friend who, it's been a long time now, her son, I think he was 5 years old when he developed a nut allergy. And as soon as he came in and we had put signs on the doors, all I could think was, this is a vaccine injury. How do I tell his mom? Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say this is a vaccine injury, but I should say this sounds like a vaccine injury. Anyway, only to confirm when I talked to her just a little while ago, we were not close at the time we are now. She said the only thing that changed Friday when he got his vaccines, Monday when he had a peanut butter sandwich, was that. It was just that he had had his. And she said, I knew that that's what it was. I knew it. And I said, did you ever talk to the doctor about it? And she said, no, he didn't bring it up. Just, you know, that was the end of it. And anyway, this definitely put a little blip on her radar, because her next son is due for that same set of 5-year-old vaccine.
Based on like what you were just saying a few minutes ago, when you asked her if she had reported it to her doctor or if she had asked her doctor about it, and she said, no, we don't realize how many of these adverse reactions or injuries are being made normal. They're being told that they're normal, or they're being told that they're common, but they're not being reported. Or people are afraid to ask their doctors, or people are afraid to say, hey, this happened. This ties back into our whole conversation about the lack of awareness around vaccine injury, the lack of awareness around adverse reactions. And so, like you and I were just talking about, what's the percentage of vaccine adverse reactions that are reported? It's
1%.
Literally 1%. And it's documented. And when people say, oh, that's not true, this is the study done by Johns Hopkins. So it's just like, we are providing you with this information for you to take and for you to go home and for you to read. But there are some people who would rather not do that, it's not that they want to turn a blind eye to it. It's just that I feel that some people truly cannot accept that this is the world that we're living in, that this is, that these things are happening, that these things are being normalized by doctors, medical professionals. But they also, like you said, it's not necessarily their fault, because they aren't taught these things in school.
What I almost always hear when I bring this subject up with, you know, friend, acquaintance, whoever, is, well, I trust my doctor.
Right.
And it's hard for anyone to think like that my doctor is doing, actually a friend of my sister's is like, well, doctors aren't bad people. And that's not it. Like, I want to reiterate that doctors also don't know. I think the only thing I would fault a doctor for is to say that the mom doesn't know her child. So
yes.
If the mom comes to you and says, this happened after these vaccines were given, then listen to her.
Right.
She knows her child. And then do something with that information. Maybe the first couple of times you just file it because you don't know what else to do with it. But after that, look into it and don't just call these people anti-vax. I mean, most of the people that are considered or calling themselves is because they have an injured child after a vaccine was given.
Right.
They don't want to be ostracized from the public. They don't want to be called liars. This isn't Munchausen syndrome. Literally, child was fine one day, child was not okay the next day.
Right.
And the only thing that changed was vaccines. And I will say that that is not always the case. Sometimes it's months and
years,
years of accumulation of these toxins mm-hmm. between aluminum and thimerosal. As much as people want to say that thimerosal or mercury is not in vaccines, it absolutely is, because it is listed on the ingredient list. And if it wasn't an ingredient, why would it be on an ingredient list? Right. Most people don't know that WI-38 is a baby girl that was aborted in the 60s, and that MRC-5 is a baby boy that was aborted in the 60s. But here's the thing, is those would not be ingredients on the vaccines if they were not still in the vaccines. And that was one thing that our judge did not believe. He said, okay, well, those were, he didn't say this. The opposing expert said, well, that was done in the 60s. So, you know, vaccines have been made since then that there's really not any of those particles left in. But we are literally putting girl DNA into our boys and boy DNA into our girls. No wonder we are the most unhealthy. We are the most unhealthy first world nation, and our children are suffering, and everyone is turning a blind eye.
And that's the thing too, is that people just don't realize, they don't realize that there are injuries that happen right away, and there are injuries that happen years and years down the road. And the reason you don't realize that is because there are no studies.
Yeah. No long-term studies.
There are no long-term studies. And you know, this is the thing that really irks me to my core, is like what you said. What does a mother coming to a doctor saying, hey, my child was healthy and thriving and doing this, that, and X, Y, and Z, and then they receive their vaccines and now they're not doing these things, what does she have to gain? There's no reason that a person would lie about that. And that's the thing that I genuinely do not understand, why you would brush that off, or why you would ignore that, or why you would make someone think that there's no way that they're connected without even actually looking into it. Like you said, we live in America where we supposedly have the best healthcare system, saying this while doing air quotes, because we don't. We have a sick care system, and it's so difficult to be on the outside, like what you and I are talking about, and be labeled anti this or anti that, or be told that we don't care about other people's health because we don't make the same medical decisions for ourselves or our children. It's incredibly frustrating, because at the end of the day, what we're trying to do is we're trying to have people understand that these things that they're telling you that are healthy for yourselves, for your children, are the things that are making you sick.
A vaccine in general, introducing your body to an attenuated virus, it gets your body used to or acquainted with this virus that your body can make antibodies to. But the way that these vaccines are created, with all of these extra ingredients that are end up being toxic to our bodies and accumulate over time with injection after injection after injection. Again, this would be, my son would have had 40 vaccines in 4 years. That is what creates the problem. In general, the idea of a vaccine can be genius. We can even say it's genius, but the way that these have been done and safety completely ignored, all while propagating the fact that they're safe and effective without actual safety studies,
right,
that is where the problem comes in.
Right. And I think that's one thing too, is that people don't realize, like you mentioned before, mercury and thimerosal. They don't realize that these adjuvants that they're adding to these vaccines to make them work are crossing the blood-brain barrier. And all of those heavy metals are sitting in the brains of our children. And if you really sit back and you look at the research and you look at the rising rates of childhood cancer, of autism, of type 1 diabetes, of all of these autoimmune conditions, it's insane. It is truly insane. And the fact that people aren't focusing on why these things are happening and how we can prevent them from happening, and they're only focusing on making or finding a cure. Why are we not rewinding and looking at what's causing it? Why are we not, like what you talked about with your dad? Why are we not stopping and saying, okay, this crazy treatment is not working for my body. It's doing far more damage. Why are we not stepping back and realizing you can heal your body in other ways? And that's where I also get frustrated, when people are like, oh, well, you don't care about people, and you don't care about people who have autoimmune disorders and this and that, with the health choices you're making for your family. And I'm like, actually, no, I care deeply. I care very, very much so deeply about everybody and what they're going through. And that's why we're here talking about this, because we are trying to help people potentially avoid becoming ill with autoimmune disorders or with vaccine injuries. And so it's something that I could spend hours and hours talking about, and I'm sure you could too. It's wild to see the lack of, like you said, they keep saying safe and effective, safe and effective, safe and effective. Show me where it's safe. Show me where it's effective.
That's right. And that's, you know, to circle back to our judge, he has been told time and time and time again that this is what has saved humanity.
Right.
The vaccine saved humanity. And so I just look like a selfish, you know, little brat trying to keep my kid from being vaccinated when there are documented reasons for an exemption. And thankfully, Indiana still has medical exemptions and religious exemptions. So for him to completely ignore it, all I can think, trying to give him a little bit of credit, is that he is scared for other people, mm-hmm. thinking that other people are in danger, or that my child is in danger because he didn't get his vaccines. But it feels like it's criminal, because 40 vaccines in 1 year has never been studied. In fact, no catch-up schedule has been studied.
No.
For effectiveness or for safety. And so I'm really just at a loss for how we even got to this place, with me being a nurse, with Jack having bone seizures and ptosis, as well as, I didn't even mention this, he has a SNP in his DNA, two different ones that say that he does not detox as well as he should, which, there you go again. But people will say, oh, there's no toxins in these vaccines. He'll be just fine. So,
yeah, it's just, and like you said, I think it's just what it comes down to is people have been told for literally their entire lives one thing, and then having to unlearn that and relearn things is something that a lot of people are not comfortable with. It takes you stepping out of what you thought and introduces a whole new world. And sometimes people say, oh, all you do is talk about negative things, all you do is talk about health things. And I'm like, yes, and it may seem heavy, but it's necessary, because literally we spent this entire episode talking about people not knowing these things, people not having true informed consent, people growing up with allergies or autoimmune disorders, or losing people to cancer, or children with autism. It's so heartbreaking that we have moved so far away from what is natural to us and what health really means. And so I think we all, I think especially in the United States, we really need to get back to that, and we really need to start having some open and honest conversations about that. And what it comes down to is really listening to mothers. I don't know how else to say it, because I mean, me personally, I feel like I'm always the one advocating for my child. I'm always the one going to all these appointments. I'm the one who's making sure she takes her supplements and eats healthy food and drinks water. And so to have someone who does not see your child on a daily basis tell you what they think you should do, or who may never have even met your child,
right,
to try and give you some sort of medical decision or diagnosis is just incredibly inappropriate. Yeah, it's something that I don't understand. And this is why, as soon as we were talking, I was like, you know what, we need to sit on a podcast, and we need to talk about this, and we need to open up this conversation, because I know for a fact that you are not the only person who has gone through this. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it before. There are people who are like, okay, well, my ex or the judge decided that we have to do this and we have to vaccinate our children. And it's coming at the livelihood of children and their lives. It's coming at their lives. And I think that people need to understand that, and people need to understand why we care so deeply. And look at all the experience that you have. Look at what you saw when you were working, what you learned and what you unlearned, what you saw your dad go through. It's just, these types of conversations need to be had, and they need to not be seen as controversial.
That's right. I want to make this clear. He had all of those other cancers removed by surgery. So he never ended up doing chemo.
Oh, he didn't do chemo. He only had surgery.
Right. He only had surgery.
Okay.
For the other ones up until that 5. No, that's okay. But I have heard of many other stories of we did chemo and then we did nutrition and that's what worked.
Okay.
So I've seen that story too, but thankfully that wasn't my dad. We just knew that radiation and chemo were going to destroy him. So
yeah,
that's why decided not to do that. I should say my mom decided not to do that, and she was right.
Go, mama. See? Mama gut.
Mama. That's right.
Mama
she's
bear.
Taught me a lot. She actually ended up becoming a nutritional or a health coach focused in nutrition and
oh,
has
she
been
did.
An excellent practitioner to turn to for tons and tons of people in our area who are, you know, we're struggling with cancer and took her advice. So
that's amazing.
That's right.
It's so amazing. So I wanted to spend some time talking about the ways in which we can help in this situation, the ways that we can share. I mean, this podcast is something that I'm hoping that everyone who's listening to will share it far and wide on all social media platforms. So you tell us what would be the most helpful to you.
Okay. Well, at the recording of this podcast, I have 23 days. So tomorrow will be 22 days to raise $50,000. So we have already spent $80,000 on this, $80,000 plus. And what is left on my bill is $50,000. And my firm that the lawyer works for will not like add another project on without there being a zero balance. And so I have $50,000 left to pay, and we are just tapped out after $80,000. We are just like, don't have anything left right now. And so I'm asking that this tribe comes together. And honestly, though it feels like a mountain, I think we're at 49,000 now. All it will take is $25 for 2,000 people. So it feels like an incredibly large number. But again, our tribe is huge. And I just know that if 2,000 people will give $25, that we will be there. And if I don't make it in 23, 22 days, the judge's order for my son to be fully vaccinated with all of the public health mandated vaccines and whatever is in the pike until he's 18, that's set in stone. So there's no overturning it if I can't appeal this in 22 days.
So, and this is what, I mean, it's incredibly difficult to be in your position with everything that you've gone through in general with your separation, and legal stuff is really difficult to deal with on top of all of the fees that come along with it. And sometimes I feel like people are weary of donating to things at first, but with your story, this is something that happens every day. This is something that we need to fight back against. This is your son's life. This is his livelihood. And so I'm really genuinely hoping that every single person who is listening shares it with someone, and that person shares it with someone, and then that they can donate whatever they possibly can, whatever they can, because this is something that matters. It matters deeply. And I'm so sorry that you are going through this. And I cannot imagine how you are feeling right now, because I am feeling in all the emotions just in hearing your story the first time that I heard it last week and to now. So we are going to do whatever we can to share this. And I'm going to include your GoFundMe page in the show notes. The GoFundMe page is also in my Instagram bio. It will be shared everywhere. So anyone and everyone who's listening, please go over to the GoFundMe. Please donate whatever you can. And like we said, please share about this podcast episode, or even if you feel called to share on your stories, if you feel like you want to talk about it and just tag Hannah in it or tag myself in it. I will include both of our Instagram handles in the show notes as well. I just wanted to say thank you for coming on and sharing your story with us, Hannah, and for being so open and honest and vulnerable. This is not something that's easy to talk about in any capacity. So thank you for coming on with us. And I just wanted to see if you had any final words that you wanted to leave everyone with.
Yes, thank you. While I have, you know, the ear of the people on your platform, if you have never read a vaccine insert, please, please do that. If you have vaccines coming up or you're pregnant right now, please start researching vaccines. It is not for the faint of heart. It is a lot of work, but it's work that your doctor is likely not going to do for you. You are your own advocate. You are the gatekeeper of your home. And between the books that have been written on vaccines, the YouTube videos from doctors who are very well versed in vaccine injuries, and the documentaries like Vaccines Revealed and The Truth About Vaccines and Vaxxed, all are very easy ways to get flooded with information that will help you make an informed decision whether or not you want to vaccinate your children or get vaccinated yourself. I mean, that's you know, for adults now too. And
absolutely,
if you can make an actual informed consent, you will be a lot better off. So I'm begging you, for yourself and for your family, for your friends, please make sure that you're informed. You are likely not going to get that from a medical professional.
Yeah, and I think it's super important. And like you said, reading these things is definitely not for the faint of heart. And I remember when I first started doing the research myself, I found myself staying up late at night. Like, even when, like, it, before my daughter was born, but even more so after she was born, I was literally up until like 1-2 o'clock in the morning, no matter how tired I was from being up with her all day when she was a newborn. I just felt like I could not stop doing research. Once I read an insert and then I started looking at the current schedule, and then I realized that there are no long-term safety studies. You just can't stop. You really can't. And some days it feels very heavy and some days it feels very overwhelming. But at the end of the day, we're literally talking about our lives and the lives of our children. And honestly, at this point, lives of future generations. So it's incredibly important to talk about. And thank you for saying that. And I will also include those documentaries in the show notes as well, in case people are not familiar with them, because that's one of the ways that I really had my eyes open to them in a simple but yet also very educational manner.
It's very simple to just sit back and listen to real mothers and real parents, to real families, to injuries, to doctors, scientists, pharmacists who are speaking out, lawyers who are brave enough to tell the truth.
Yeah, there is one actually that I meant to mention before. Dr. Paul Thomas, he and Jennifer Margulis wrote the Vaccine Friendly Plan, but I feel that they have also changed their views very much so on vaccines since writing that book. What they care about is that people do have true informed consent. That's what they care about. And so Dr. Paul Thomas actually had a study where he compared the children within his practice who were vaccinated compared to the children who were unvaccinated. And he shared that data, and he had his license suspended because he shared that. And so that's something that A, a lot of people don't know about, and B, why would they suspend his license for sharing data that actually shows the difference between children who are vaccinated versus unvaccinated?
Yeah, that's
it's
incredible.
Just something that makes you go,
Yeah, that's something to look into for sure. If you're being censored, then there's something that you should know. There's also an Audible, or a book that I listened to on Audible called Vaccines, Autoimmunity, and the Changing Nature of Childhood Illness. And that is by Thomas Cohen, MD. And he, I mean, honestly, I heard the first like 3.5 chapters and I was like, well, that's it. Like, we don't really even need to say anymore. A doctor is writing this, and from his own experience, it really hits the nail on the head.
That one. Yeah, that book is, I highly, highly recommend that, because I felt the same exact way. I read the first chapter and I was like, literally every single person who is either going to make the decision to vaccinate themselves or their children or any medical professional should have to read that. It should be required reading.
Absolutely.
So we'll include that too.
But I'm full of it. If you need any information on any of this stuff, please get a hold of me. I'm happy to share it.
Yeah, I was going to say, so where, if you feel comfortable, where can people find you?
Okay, I am Hannah M. Riley. How do I not even know? Yes, I am Hannah M. Riley on Instagram. I also have a Facebook, but I will say I'm on there like maybe once a week for my business, but that's about it. So Instagram is where you should find me.
Perfect. Well, like I said before, thank you for coming on and for being so brave and sharing your story with everybody, and for just being an incredible human, an incredible nurse, an incredible mama to your sweet boy. You really are. You're an inspiration to many, many people. So thank you.
Thank you. I know that God is not done with this yet. I know that He put me on this earth to be the mom of this boy, to fight. And I am here and I'll fight till the end.
Yes. Amen to that. Well, thank you so much, listeners, for joining us. And like I said before, if this episode aligned with how you feel about anything that we chatted about on this episode, please share it. If you do have anything that you can donate to helping Hannah and her son and the legal fees that come along with this case, please, please head over to the GoFundMe page. And please just share it across all platforms. Please pray. Please do anything you possibly can to help us in this situation. We so appreciate everything that you guys are able to do, and we hope that you will join us again next week. So talk to you soon. Bye.